This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We cover a lot of different topics around the Umpqua Valley, and this one happens to be statewide, but related here certainly as well. Tomorrow, we start May, which is also Oregon Wine Month, and we just happen to have the president of the Oregon Wine Board, who's a Douglas County resident, Greg Jones from Abasella Vineyards. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Well, Oregon Wine Month. Now, how long has that officially been around?
Well, I think we've been celebrating it in the wine industry for a long time, but it was established by Governor Kulongoski back in 2012, and we've been celebrating it ever since. It's a great way for the industry to come together and tout ourselves a little bit.
Now, you've obviously, a lot of people are aware, got a long background in wine. Growing, well, let's see, when your father got into wine as a second career, he was probably in his 50s?
Correct.
And so that would have put you back a couple decades or so. But you were already kind of in the world of science and that kind of thing anyway, right?
Yeah, I was doing my PhD in climatology, and it just seemed like such a natural for me to combine studying climate and studying viticulture and wine production. So that's kind of how I got into the business, but it also kind of helped my dad and Abasella in terms of finding the property and doing what we're doing today.
So when he came out here, where were you at that point?
When he came out here, I was in Virginia. I was doing my PhD at the University of Virginia, but I was doing my work in Bordeaux, France. So I was going back and forth to Bordeaux, collecting data, talking to growers, trying to better understand their system there.
Now, what drew you to this whole area versus some other kind of career?
Well, my first career, I was a chef, and I really understood how food and wine worked from that experience. And when I went back to school, I was going to study climatology or hydrology and likely agriculture. And when I needed to make a decision on what crops to study, it was either corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, or wine. And wine just seemed like the wine seemed like the much more interesting area to study.
Wow. So how long were you a chef?
Well, I was a chef from, I started out as a line cook when I was 16, and then I ran a restaurant when I was 18. I was a full chef at 18, and was in the restaurant business till about the age of 24 or so.
Wow. You obviously don't like to just slow down.
No, I had multiple careers in my life, and I think it's just I've been very fortunate to be in the right place in some ways and kind of the wrong place in other ways, but it all has worked out.
Now, talk about what you did sort of in the academic field at a couple places here in Oregon.
Well, I've been here in Oregon. I was at Southern Oregon University for 21 years. I was there in the Department of Environmental Science and Policy. And again, all my research there and all my work was really all about bettering the viticulture and wine production in Southern Oregon. But I taught numerous classes across meteorology and climatology and map making and different things like that. I left there in 2017 and moved up to McMinnville and started teaching and developing a wine program at Linfield University.
And then what brought you back down here?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a happenstance of timing, but the biggest part was my dad was ready to retire, and we had talked about me potentially coming back and running the business, and it just seemed like the right time. And so in 2021, moved here to the Douglas County Roseburg area and now run the property.
And your father, who has been on this program a number of times over the years, didn't retire until he was in his 80s?
Yes, correct.
You guys have a long sort of a pattern of really working hard at things. I mean, somebody pointed out that I'm kind of guessing your age, but you approached this new venture at a time a lot of people are ready to to slow down on their own.
Well, you're insinuating that I'm old, right? Is that correct?
Well, I would suspect that we're somewhere near the same point, so yeah.
Well, no, it was the right time for me. I probably would have stayed in academia for another 4 or 5 years anyway. And so coming to Abbasella allows me to kind of carry on the family legacy in terms of the company, but also oversee the transition and carrying it into the future. It's been an awful lot of fun. My title is I'm the chief executive officer, the CEO, but I tell people that I'm really the maintenance man. I'm the one that walks around with an owner's eye, and I'm looking to make sure that everything works for all my employees and for the customers that come to visit us.
And when your father chose that property, I know there was a lot of what I would call geeky science that went into that.
Well, it was, and I was part of that. I helped him when I was at the University of Virginia. I was putting together a lot of the data that he needed to help make a good decision. And the whole framework that he really approached was that climate was key to being able to grow the variety the way he thought it could be grown. So we searched for the best place to do that, and we looked all over the Western United States, but really honed in on the Umpqua for multiple reasons. The climate was suitable for growing the kind of varieties he wanted, and it had relatively low risk, meaning winters weren't too cold, spring frosts were not that big of a problem, rain during harvest was not that big of a problem. So we honed in on this area because of that climate suitability, but also low risk.
And because he wanted to grow Tempranillo, which everybody said, you can't do that.
Yeah, you know, Tempranillo was just a variety that California didn't embrace very much, and there's some historical reasons for it. But back at the time in the early 90s when my dad first started looking into this, there may have been only a few hundred acres of Tempranillo in the entire United States. And most of it was going into jug wine or box wine, something that none of us really knew much about. So my dad thought he could correct that framework. And so you're right, it just wasn't being done. And so he was really the first to pioneer it here in Oregon and in U.S. total.
And your work on the Oregon Wine Board, how long have you been involved in that?
The Oregon Wine Board is a semi-independent government agency. I was appointed by the governor 4 years ago. You serve a 3-year term, and I'm serving my second term right now. I've been the chair of the Wine Board for the past 2 years, and currently leading the Wine Board through a strategic planning process to try to put us in the best shape to represent the industry going forward.
And now you've mentioned the sort of the semi-government role, kind of unique.
Yeah, it is. It's an agency. The Oregon wine industry is, of course, an alcoholic beverage industry that has both a vineyard presence and then a winemaking presence. And so it crosses over between policy and research, marketing, education. And the Oregon Wine Board is the research, marketing, and education side. And the Oregon Wine Growers Association is more of the advocacy side or the policy side.
And there's other wine organizations around the state as well, right?
Oh, yeah. We have regional organizations that have been going strong for many years. As a matter of fact, the Oregon Wine Growers Association was started here in the Umpqua back in the 80s and then became a statewide entity. But now we have the Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Association, which is here in this region. There's one in the Rogue Valley. There's a couple of Eastern Oregon groups. And then also there's a Portland Urban Wineries group as well.
And we're seeing that now for the urban scene in Portland. Is that people that are mainly just sourcing grapes?
A little bit. Some of them do have vineyards out in the Willamette Valley or elsewhere, and then they bring the grapes in and process it in the Portland metro area, and then they have a retail presence there. But many people in the Portland area are buying fruit from other regions and bringing it in.
Now, you spent a lot of time in the Rogue Valley with the university, but obviously you could watch the wine industry there grow. People know that it's warmer down there, but explain how that lends itself to maybe some differences in what is created.
Well, it goes back to the varieties that can be made and the wine styles that can be produced. The southern, southern Oregon in and of itself has much more potential to grow a wider range of varieties than, say, the Willamette Valley. We, when I was doing some early work in the early 2000s, I was able to document that we had at least 70 varieties being grown in southern Oregon. A few more in the Rogue Valley than here in the Umpqua, but there was a wide diversity of varieties being able to be produced. In the Rogue Valley, a little bit warmer, you can do varieties that need a little bit warmer kind of conditions to ripen. Up here, we can do a little bit different kind of framework because we have some cooler climate areas as well.
All right, we're going to take a break. More when we come back. Greg Jones of Abasella Vineyards. It is Oregon Wine Month starting tomorrow, and we're going to do a series of interviews about that. This is the first one. It'll be a podcast after one at 541radio.com. Back in a moment on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1. Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show with Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt. That'll be at 4 o'clock. And on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County program, we're going to jump clear into the month of May and hit a number of topics. In fact, tomorrow we are going to be talking to the Roseburg Country Club, their head of their membership and marketing for the board. In fact, we're doing two segments tomorrow, and the other one we're still putting together with the Umpqua Valley Police Canine Program. So that'll be on tomorrow. Greg Jones of Abasella Vineyards here today, the CEO and the president of the Oregon Wine Board. I mean, you've really seen wine in Oregon, really, in the 25 or so years you've been here, really seen a lot of changes.
Yeah, the industry has grown tremendously. It hasn't done it in a vacuum, though. There's a lot of headwinds out there, and we're working to really represent the industry as best we can at the state level. Our marketing efforts, like the Oregon Wine Month, is very important for promoting the industry. But we also do research. We fund research that looks at various issues that we have in terms of potential grape growing issues or winemaking issues. And then we also have an educational arm, which is the part of the Oregon Wine Board that tries to make sure that the industry is well educated or versed in the kind of things that we see. And that culminates with our Oregon Wine Symposium every February.
Now, who would be attending that?
Well, for about the past 7 or 8 years, without COVID pandemic period coming into account, we've been having between 1,000 and 1,300 attendees at the Convention Center in Portland. Whenever we've been live, there are a lot of people show up. We have nearly 200 plus exhibitors that are there, selling and showcasing wares in the vineyard and the winery. But also it's mostly growers, people who work in the industry, whether they're in the tasting room or in the vineyard or in the winery, coming to learn in terms of what are the cutting edge kind of things that are going on out there in the business.
Wow. And I know, you talk about the learning component. And for the average person listening right now, if they don't know much about wine, there is so much out there to learn, but they don't necessarily have to learn all of it.
No, and I think that, it's really embracing the idea that having an experience and learning a little bit about what you're eating or drinking is really important. And wine is, there's some snobbery kind of framework out there that wine has, but I really, really try to get people to understand the fact that wine is not just meant for the highfalutin kind of individual or so. It's for everybody. It's a lifestyle. It's a food and beverage kind of framework that I think is just really important to engage in and find your own way in terms of what wine means to you and your family.
Now, I don't know if you were involved in this at all during your time at Linfield, but a couple months ago, I totally stumbled across a series of video interviews that Linfield did with folks in the wine industry from all over Oregon. I watched part of one, and it's one of those things that when I have spare time, which seems to be a rare commodity, I would like to sit down and, you know, watch some more. That was pretty fascinating work. Were you involved in that?
Yeah, the Linfield Wine Archive was actually funded initially through the Erath Family Foundation, which was set up by Dick Erath years ago. And I serve on that foundation board, and we helped fund the start of what's called the Wine Archive at Linfield. And that has grown tremendously. Linfield supported it. The industry supported it. And it now there's hundreds of interviews by very legendary people within the industry. Some of the original pioneers have all been interviewed. Plus, there's a small kind of museum library collection there that is really very, very nice, too.
Well, and it was interesting to watch. The one I watched the most was Chris Lake, that used to have the Southern Oregon Wine Institute and went on to work at Abicella and has now been up north for quite a while. But to hear people really tell their story, because oftentimes, you know, people try to do bullet points. I mean, we do this interview and 22 minutes, and we could talk about this stuff for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. No, as a matter of fact, if you want, you can go find my interview at the Wine Archive at Linfield, too. No, I think that it's been a very important addition for all of us to be able to sit down and tell our history, whether it's through your family operation or your historical background and how you came to work within the wine industry. It's been a great resource for the state.
And here in the Umpqua Valley, the people that are owners and longtime employees even have such a diverse background. I mean, some people, like you, really started out in the science, the academic side of things. Other people were more artistic and will tell you now that they made a lot of mistakes because they didn't understand the science.
Well, you're right, though, that the wine industry is a collective of people from all backgrounds, whether they be engineers. Quite a few engineers have come into the wine business, or artists, or just people who love agriculture in different ways. And, you can learn a lot from each other. And I think that's part of the business that I like a lot. In the Umpqua Valley, everybody is collaborative. If you've got a problem, you can go ask another grower, producer, and see what their approach is to that issue. And I think the sharing component of that really makes it such a great industry to work with.
Well, and I know that even in the early days, and I won't get the dates exactly right or anything, but I want to say in the 70s, people like Richard Sommer and Scott Henry and some of the folks back then, maybe Philippe Giardet, at whatever point he entered the scene, used to evaluate each other's work and essentially had permission to critique it pretty tough.
Well, we do the same thing today. The Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Association holds tastings that everybody who produces wine in the Umpqua is allowed to bring something. It could be something that they think is perfect, or maybe it's got a flaw or whatever it may be, but everybody comes together and tries the wine and critically talks about the winemaking framework, maybe the viticulture framework that went into producing that wine, so we can better learn from each other.
So obviously it's an ever-growing process, and this is the part that I think I would probably fail at, is the patience level of doing everything right and then the weather not cooperating.
Well, Mother Nature is going to do what it does. As hard as you can work, it could be an untimely frost event or hail or something. You can't control that. So you have to be as prepared as you can. Understand that there's uncertainty associated with the weather, and then be able to address it as you best you can.
And what do you see kind of for the future of the wine in the Umpqua Valley?
Well, I think we have a lot of potential here. There's a wonderful array of landscapes to be able to plant grapes in this region, and the people that are doing so are doing so with a wide range of varieties. And I think producing some very, very good wine, we just need to figure out how we can better attract more people to the region. We have beautiful, beautiful county to visit, and the wineries are a big piece of that tourism puzzle.
Do you feel like the fact that you can grow so many different varietals here, it's a plus for a lot of reasons, but it's also hard to sort of brand the area like the Willamette Valley is branded?
Well, it's hard. I don't know if there's a real right answer to this. Do you brand yourself to one variety or two? versus being diverse. It's really an issue. And Europe kind of set the stage for it, where a place like Burgundy is known for two varieties, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, or a place like Bordeaux is known for seven or eight. You know, so there's a very different kind of framework with that. And I'm not sure there's a one-size-fits-all. I think the main key is you should be growing what the climate gives you so that you can make the best fruit and the best wines from that variety.
And isn't there some locations in Europe where basically you're prohibited from growing certain varietals?
Yeah, they're actually controlled in terms of what they can grow and how they can grow it. But I can tell you right now, with the changing nature of climate and other aspects of the wine industry, many of those hard, fast rules that Europe has had for years are starting to be looked at, and there's been some changes already.
And real quick, as we wrap up, talk about your climatology work.
Well, I still do a lot of climate work. I do, of course, mostly now with Abbasella. We're one of the more instrumented sites you'd ever want to find. We have four weather stations and multiple temperature sensors and multiple soil moisture gauges. And so we try to use data. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it, as the saying goes. And that's what we try to do.
Anything else you want to let us know about?
Well, I do want to let you know, it's Oregon Wine Month starting May. Every producer in the state is doing different things to help promote Oregon Wine Month. Here in the Umpqua Valley, we're doing Pairing Forward Weekend over Memorial Day, where you can visit individual wineries, try the diversity of varieties that we're making, and have it with a special kind of food pairing at each one.
All right, a lot going to be happening, and it's certainly the time of year to get out and enjoy it.
Yes, it is.
All right, Greg Jones, president of the Oregon Wine Board, CEO of Abbasella Vineyards. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
1259 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.